So, we're approaching Christmas, which is very nice. Or is it winter solstice? We're not allowed to call it Christmas anymore, are we? It's got to be winter solstice. When darkness is at its most and the light is at its least. However, I read just today that a man was complaining on the internet about this, how bored he was of this argument about, oh, you can't call it Christmas anymore, you've got to call it. And he was suggesting that everyone just give it up, because it's just give up the argument, because it's ridiculous. It's just like, can we move on? Is religion in crisis? It seems like we're living in a far more secular world these days, doesn't it? I'm reminded of a novel by the American author Tom Robbins. And he has a character, Pan, the Greek god of the wild. And in the novel, he's gradually disappearing. To the very end, there's nothing left of him. He doesn't exist anymore. The reason being that he owes his existence on people believing in him. And who believes in Pan these days? And I thought that was a very good point. Is religion in crisis? Are we entering into a more godless age? Somebody reminded me, or told me, that a recent survey of 5- and 6-year-olds discovered that a lot of them don't know what the Nativity is, because it's no longer being taught. There are a lot of threats to what we might call traditional religious ways of viewing the world. One of those threats is that we're living in a capitalist age. There's a lot of consumerism. I was thinking maybe we should stop calling it Christmas and start calling it consumer mass. Anyone who witnessed any of the TV footage of Black Friday recently and the fighting over TV plasma screens and such like, this is indeed why they call it Black Friday. It just sums up human beings. So people are trying to find happiness through consuming. That's the way a lot of people see the world. That is helped by science, of course, and a basic scientific materialist view of life, which says material world is everything. It's a physical universe, and mind is just a sort of lucky chance arising due to various complex physical processes occurring. And so the scientific worldview doesn't hold that there's any more meaning to life than the appearance of things. The appearance of things is indeed the way it is. So they are very sceptical of such things as karma, rebirth, even sceptical about consciousness. Because they've got no proof as they see it. So the combination of a scientific worldview and a desire to gain happiness through consuming does lead to a particular kind of outlook, and it doesn't seem to leave much room for ideas of beyond, of a deeper reality behind the appearance of things. Added to which, religion really kicks itself in the foot and holds itself back because of the whole fundamentalist thing that's going on and the militancy that's arising. I don't think anybody could remain unaffected by the events in Pakistan this week. Those terrible things. All done in the name of, but is it really? It's not just a modern phenomenon. We only have to go through back a few hundred years and we have things like the Spanish Inquisition. It's not new. But there you go, that means that people who are intent on living a material existence, who believe that consuming is the way to happiness, and then see religion, in inverted commas, behaving in such terrible ways, all feeds into this idea that religion is bad. So is it true then? Are we entering into what the Hindu tradition calls Kali Yuga, the age of darkness and chaos and destruction? No. Well, yes and no. See, the problem is you cannot have absolute darkness, just as you cannot have absolute light in the relative scheme of things. How do we know that it's dark? Only that we can compare it to times when it's light. How do we know it's light? Only because there are times when it's not light, when it's dark. In a relative scheme of things, you cannot have absolutes. No matter how dark it gets. And let's be honest, it is getting dark at the moment. It is only an opportunity for the light to shine. So despite the fact that we might be going through a period where people really don't have a belief in anything deeper than the superficial appearance of things, it's out of that darkness that an aspiration grows in people to find the light. To give you an example of that, apposite example, the Buddha maintained that his teaching would last for 5,000 years, after which it would have become so corrupted that it was no longer usable, no longer fit for purpose, and it would be discarded. So we go into darkness. But what happens? It's at that moment that a new historical Buddha emerges, who rediscovers the lost path to Nirvana and makes it available for other people to walk that path. So darkness and light are so intertwined. You can't have the one without the other. We need the darkness. To put this another way, you can say that this human realm is a learning school. It's somewhere where people come to learn lessons, beings come to learn lessons about how life works. So you have to have obstacles, you have to have difficulties, and people have to be allowed, be given the grace to try things, to discover whether or not they do indeed lead to the peace and the happiness to which they aspire. Because we always have to remember that underlying all of this is something that unifies us all. Everyone is searching for the light. Everyone wants to find freedom from suffering, happiness, and understanding. So there are remarkable beings that from time to time emerge who find new ways, different ways, original ways of discovering the true depth of life. As an interesting aside, it's interesting to recognise and observe how religions tend to subsume teachers of other traditions, the originators of other traditions, in their own belief structure. So in Christianity, for instance, the Buddha is regarded as being the saint Josaphat. In Hinduism, Jesus is regarded to be an avatar, the incarnation of the god Vishnu. And in Buddhist tradition, Jesus is regarded to be an enlightened man, someone who produced completely original method, a way of reaching enlightenment. Which, when you put it like that, makes you think, why wouldn't a Buddhist be very happy to celebrate Christmas? So, all these different ways, all these different spiritual traditions are hoping to show people the way from darkness to the light. Whether all such ways will include a supramundane teaching like the Buddhist teaching includes is debatable. Some people believe that some teachings have been corrupted. Is that true? I don't know. But what we can definitely say is that what's common to them all is an understanding, what we would call mundane right view, an understanding of what brings peace, happiness and well-being in the relative scheme of things. So how to go from dark to light and enjoy a more peaceful and happy existence. And they all agree, they're in complete agreement, that it is about learning to be more selfless, learning to let go of greedy demands for life and instead being willing to give to others. Now, whether you consider that the results of that open-handedness, friendliness, whether you consider the results of that to be granted by some kind of divine intermediary, or whether you consider it to be just simply the law of action and result, it is the case that if people behave generously, selflessly, then they get very good results for that. And I've got an example that I read today. I don't know if you saw this story, but in Preston, recently, a young lady, a student at the university there, was on a night out in town, and she needed a cab ride home, but had run out of money. She tried to use the cash point, and her card didn't work. So she was a bit stuck. She got chatting to this homeless man, Robbie, who had been homeless for 7 months due to whatever circumstances he found himself in that position. He offered her all his remaining money to help her get a taxi ride, £3. Now, she declined, but she was very struck by his generosity. She did a little research about Robbie and found out that he was actually, despite his difficult situation, he was extraordinarily generous. He would offer people his coat if they were cold, or his scarf. He would share his food. And he was very well regarded. So she decided that she would set up a fund and get people to donate. So what she and her friends did was do a night out when they would live rough for 24 hours, and people were asked to donate £3 each. Now, obviously, she did this via social network. It's one of these viral things. They made £20,000 for Robbie. Enough money for him and some of his other homeless friends to get accommodation and to get a leg up. Now, some people dispute whether karma is real. Sometimes we can be blinded by science. Acting in those ways will bring light into anybody's life. However, we come back to the same problem. No matter how light your life becomes, you will still be troubled by the dark. You can't have absolute light in the relative scheme of things. You have to go beyond to truly be at peace, to truly be free. Krishnamurti, the Indian teacher, said famously, "Truth is a pathless land," and it is indeed. Truth is not some future state. Truth is right now. And the deeper purpose of the Buddhist teaching, as we all know, is of course to enter into a practice of learning to be still, to be present, to be here now, and to learn to explore our world, our universe, to come to a deeper understanding of what lies beneath the appearance of things. To do that, however, everyone has to overcome a major block. It's either that they have to overcome a major block, or they have to develop a particular quality, so they have to learn a lesson in some way. The kind of blockages that occur for people are many and varied. I thought a couple that occurred for me. I think the most important one was accepting finally that my desire for self-determination, i.e. to find out the answer without anybody's help, was fatally flawed and it was never going to happen. I had to accept finally that I needed to accept instruction and to be willing to put those instructions into place. I think you can see from that that it is what we're talking about is a major self view, something that we hold dear to ourselves. Another one that for me was my record collection, which was, you know, vast vinyl collection dating back from post-punk going through all the 80s into the 90s, at which point I started on CDs. I let go of that entire collection for 50 quid. Yeah, I know. The guy said, nah, these aren't worth anything. Oh, you're lucky to find any. No one's going to be interested in this. I said, how much do you want for the whole lot? He said, 50 quid? I said, yeah, all right then. I went, what, really? Because actually, as I now discover, it was worth vastly more than that. But, you see, it wasn't just the vinyl, but I didn't care. It wasn't the vinyl, but it was also the me in it, the history, the aspiration, the enjoyment, the effort that was contained in that collection. But it meant nothing in the end. It meant absolutely nothing. It was just a bit of plastic. Everyone has to give up something of themselves, something major. It can't be done otherwise. For some people, it's overcoming family opposition to doing this. For another person, it's an attachment to their image. One would be seen as cool, and being a meditator isn't cool. Whatever it might be. But there is something for everyone that they have to overcome in order to be able to do the supramundane teaching. On the other side, it might be a life lesson. It might be someone having to develop a certain quality, like a quality of caring, which is still letting go of self-concern. It's still going out of yourself and being there for others. When you've done it all once, this is the beautiful thing, though. Once you've done it, once you've overcome that major obstacle, whatever it is, then the way is open. Because if you can do it the once, you can do it many times. And that's the key. Because what observing your moment-by-moment experience will do is remove all your views about the way you thought life was. All of them. About how who you thought you were. Oh, it's fun. Don't get me wrong. No, it's the most sublime, most profound thing you can possibly do. But it will remove all your view structures. Where do views come from? We get so caught up with life, we never actually stop to ask, well, where does this view come from that I hold so passionately that I'm willing to destroy everything around me in order to uphold? If you look at it carefully, if you strip it back, you come to realise that you hold a view because you don't understand what life's all about and you want to make sense of it. So a view comes out of ignorance, it comes out of craving for life to be different. At its very worst, and I think we see this with fundamentalism, at its very worst, views are a cancer. And the Buddha called them a cancer. He called them asavas, which means cancer. At their best, views are placeholders. Do you know what I mean by that? There's something you put in the place of the truth for the time being, because you don't know what the truth is. The Buddha's mundane teaching is a placeholder. It's just there for the time being, to help keep you in the light, so that you can work on the supramundane aspect of the path. You are ultimately going to transcend all views, including the Buddha's own teaching. That person is what I find so absolutely miraculous about the Buddha's teaching. To find the truth, you have to transcend religion. You have to transcend all notions of God. You have to transcend all notions of the Buddha. Everything has to be transcended. So it's only once you have overcome a particular obstacle or learned a particular life lesson which has shown you that it's perfectly okay to let go of these views you hold about yourself and about the world, and yet that you're not defined by that in reality, That opens the door to be able to let go of them all. And so often people are just at that point where they're trying to get Vipassana meditation going, but there's an obstacle there. In the practice, we're watching things arise and pass away. We're seeing that there's nothing we can grasp onto in reality. We begin to see all our narratives about the way we thought life was just beginning to gently, the attachment to them rather is just gently being erased and let go of. Eventually you end up in this beautiful place psychologically where you have abandoned what I might put in the context of tonight's talk, the pursuit of the light and the running away from the darkness. You realise that I've used before the analogy of a mouse's wheel. Imagine heading towards the light, trying to get away from the darkness, but you're just no matter how far you go, because you cannot reach absolute light in that way. There will always be darkness where there's light. So eventually the meditator just relaxes, seeing that there's nothing to hold on to, there's nothing to cling on to, there is nothing to obtain, not even enlightenment itself. And yet the mind is so delightfully primed, it's so delightfully aware. It's not just lolling around, it's beautifully, pristinely present, because there are no hindrances at all. It's a delightful mind. And it's just there watching and observing without any thought at all that life should be different than it is, without chasing the light or hiding from the dark. It's just resting where it is. And it's into that mind that blooms this most incredible recognition, understanding. Ah, yes, it just flowers. There's nothing you did to make it happen. But what you had done is got rid of all the things that just stop it from just emerging. Suddenly there is just a total comprehension. A total comprehension. You'd have to say, it sounds so pompous, but you'd have to say a total comprehension of reality. It's in that moment. It's just the most delightful, unexpected, spontaneous, and you just recognise that, oh, yes, that's the answer. And at that moment, you've gone beyond both the dark and the light. This is the most extraordinary experience, the most extraordinary understanding. But you won't convince anyone, of course. Can you measure love? Can you prove that you love your kids, or your spouse, or your favourite football team? Can you prove it? Yeah, of course you love it. Can you prove it? No. But do you need to prove it? No. And in the same way, you realise the truth of things, you see that indeed there is a beyond. Can you prove it? No. Do you need to prove it? No. There's no requirement to prove it to anyone. It is just a sense of absolute peace within yourself. And you see the world spinning around, people chasing the light and hiding from the dark, chasing the dark and hiding from the light, going up and down, round and round, and it's perfect as it is, because everyone is doing what they have to do to finally come to this most extraordinary understanding. I think it is fair to say that it's the experience of anybody, or the knowledge of anybody who has truly come to understand, that all traditions have this knowledge, this understanding in its origins, at its heart. Yes, it may be down through time that things get corrupted, the unenlightened mind, the ignorant mind jumps on it, beats it about and uses it for its own advantages. Of course, but still there is this understanding that at the root of all these traditions lies this transcendental understanding. And it may very well be that the world is headed for some difficult times. It seems to be going that way. And yet, in the darkness, there are these brilliant pinpoints of light, like the night sky lit up with stars. There are centres like this one who uphold the truth that there is indeed a beyond. There are centres that, although they may not be able to realistically maintain that, yet show the way to light. And I think it's important to recognise that and remember that. That even in the darkness, the way to the light is available to anyone. And that there are many places, many traditions that are doing incredible work in helping people to see the light. So it's really good to be generous and to support such centres. I often come back to the question, well, how best can somebody support this centre? And yes, there's donating time and energy and money and all those things. I always come back to the best way to support this centre is to practice diligently, to practice well. Because as you head towards the light, you become light. And you start to shine that light, and other people see you and head towards you. Merry Christmas.